In this episode of Geo Talk, we get an update on the New Zealand mega event, we hear from an Australian trekking in Peru, and we give you the final clue to our geostuff.com.au competition. All this and more on Geo Talk. Welcome to episode 79 of Geo Talk for October 2011, and it's such a nice day this afternoon on a Sunday afternoon that I thought I'd come outside and do the recording, so you might hear a few birds and a few aeroplanes fly in the background. Well, it's nearly the end of the year. It's only two more months to go, really, after this one, and I'm starting to wonder how many of you have fulfilled your geocaching resolutions for 2011. The reason I ask, of course, is that just last week I was able to fulfill mine, which was to find the seven geocaches that were planted in Australia that still exist today that were planted in the year 2000. And a big thank you to Damo for coming along for the ride last week to find Frying Pan, which was a cache planted in, I think it was November 2000, and it was quite a hike from Sydney. It was about 3 hours, three and a half, maybe even 4 hours. I can't remember now. It was a long time drive from Sydney. There were a few leeches that were guarding it, and we were warned in the logs, but we managed to come out of there unscathed. Anyway, it was a good feeling to know that I found all seven caches that still exist that were hidden in the year 2000. Be interested to know how you've gone with your caching resolution for 2011. Maybe we should go back to some of those that we heard back in January, chase them up and see how they're going. Now, of course, that begs the question, what am I going to set for next year? Well, I'll have to have a good, hard, long think about that. It's going to be a very busy year next year, which you might find out in next episode why. Now, I was lucky enough to get my hand on two new GPSs. Well, they're not exactly new, but new in my hands anyway. Recently, I was given a Magellan Explorer 610 on a long-term loan to try that out and see how that works. So I might be putting the Garmin away over the summer and seeing how Magellan pans out. I might have to speak to my good mate P-Price as well to find out how he goes setting things up on that unit. But that'll be fun. Hopefully, we'll give a review of that early next year. And also, a Geomate Junior, one of the devices which we chatted about probably about 2 years ago now. It's a sort of stripped down kids version of a GPS, fairly simple to use. I've got all the bits and pieces for that now, the GPS and the update kit. So we'll be trying that out over the summer as well and letting you know how we go with those two devices. And talking about testing, I've been trying out an app on the Android phone called Neon Geo. It's the first Android app, apart from the Groundspeaks one, that uses Groundspeaks Live API. And I must say, it is a very good app. And at one-third the price of Groundspeaks version, it's well worth getting if you wanted a smartphone app for your Android phone for doing geocaching. It's got me baffled as to why Groundspeak charged so much for theirs. But anyway, we'll write up a review and we might have that in time for the next episode. That's Neon Geo. And on the subject of Android phones, also last weekend, while I was out finding that cache north of Sydney called Frying Pan, I tried out Where You Go, which is a Android player for Where I Go caches. And compared to the iPhone one, which used to be called Pygo, I think it's just now called Where I Go Player because it's owned by Groundspeak, it's actually very, very good. The only downside of the Where You Go app is that you can't download cartridges from the actual app itself. You have to get online, download the cartridge, the PC, Pocket PC version of the cartridge, and then transfer it across onto your phone. But needless to say, it's actually a very good device, and I will now try over the next few months, maybe over the summer break, to see if I can, on my third attempt, build a Where I Go cartridge. We'll see how we go with that. Now, a few few people wrote in after our last episode, episode 78, saying, where was the competition clue? And in case you're not wondering what that's about, over the last couple of episodes, we've been giving away some clues for our competition to win a prize from geostuff.com.au. Now, I should have mentioned, and I neglected to mention, that it was a special episode last episode as I travelled around New Zealand. If you haven't listened to it, go back and download episode 78. But this is the episode, episode 79, which has the third and final clue for our secret geocacher. Now, you have to work out who this person is based on the clues, and go back to episode 76 and episode 77 if you've missed those two. But this third one, once you've heard the clue and you think you know who it is, email your answer to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com and make sure you put in the subject line geostuff competition. Now, before I give the final clue, a big thank you to Carl from geostuff.com.au for giving us the prizes for this competition. First prize is a Magellan Explorus GC, which is a fantastic little GPS receiver. And second prize is a one-year geocaching.com premium membership gift card. So that's worth about $30. So some great prizes there on offer. Now, the prizes will be randomly drawn from the correct entries. So you must have the correct entry. Don't forget, you've got to send it in to geostuffpodcast@gmail.com and with the subject line geostuff competition. And the third clue, or the third waypoint, is Gallipoli. So that's the final clue, Gallipoli. So if you've worked out who it is, quickly get online now, send us your answer. You've got until Monday the 14th of November to answer, and we'll enter with your answer, and the correct entries will be put into a random draw, and we'll announce the winner on the next episode in November on episode number 80. Well, this podcast is for geocachers down under, and certainly a number of them get overseas. And we've got a call in now from Pipes Down Under from Sydney, who's trekking up in the highlands of Peru.
G'day, Darren, and GeoTalk podcast listeners. This is Frank, a.k.a. Pipes Down Under. Just want to let you know about a milestone cache that I'm attempting today, which would be number 500 for me. For the last 4 days, I've been trekking along the Inca Trail between 3,000 and 4,000 metres. And today is the last day of the trek, where we descend 4,000 steps down to Machu Picchu. I believe there are three geocaches down there, and hopefully I'll grab one today. So I'll let you know how I go. There's not a lot of geocaches in Peru, but I know there's a couple here that I want to grab, if not just one. And I'll let you know how I get on, and particularly the knees after the 4,000 steps.
Well, thanks for that call, Frank, and we'll catch up with you soon to see how you went with your cache hunt. Well, now it's time to head across the ditch over to New Zealand to catch up with Alan, Radio Nut 50, with what's happening over there on the land of the long white cloud.
Yeah, hi again, Darren from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand, and I certainly won't mention the rugby once in this episode. Well, not once more anyhow. In the past week, I've read a very interesting article in a monthly New Zealand walking magazine on Kauri dieback disease. While both Australia and New Zealand have great trees called the Kauri, the New Zealand tree is the majestic king of our native forests. These massive leviathans grow up to 20 metres across in diameter and 50 metres high and be known to reach ages of 2,000 years. Well, many may have heard a little bit, though, of a disease that's threatening these wonderful trees, commonly known as Kauri dieback. The problem comes from a fungus-like organism that lives in the soil or on the foliage. And the disease is actually common in many other countries, including some areas of Australia, and it's affecting large areas of forest in these places. The most successful method of control overseas is clear felling the forest and replanting, but obviously with a species where most examples are over 300 years old and maturity is around 1,000 years, this is just completely out of the question. So there's no cure here. Well, what's this got to do with geocaching? The act of walking around these trees allows us to pick up the fungus spores on our boots and shoes and transfer it to other trees. There's other reasons why we shouldn't walk on the root structure of any tree, but this is special. Anyone travelling through a Kauri forest must seriously avoid walking up to the tree. If there's a boardwalk or a trail, stick to that. Don't succumb to the temptation to hug this majestic king. It's possible your action may kill it. Well, hiding geocaches close to majestic forest giants is an attractive option. It encourages us, town-dwelling geocaches, to get out there and see these specimens. But please don't put the box close to the tree. Don't encourage searchers to wander around the root structure and possibly bring the downfall of this example that you tried to highlight. Perhaps hiding it under the boardwalk in an easily reached spot is the best option, or up the trail a bit where you can see the tree but not touch it. And importantly, add a good hint or an instruction telling people the cache is not by the tree. In fact, this brings me to a further thought. There are many reasons for hiding a cache. Some aim for the adult hide-and-seek option, making it really hard to find. And some take you to a special place, just so you can see that spot. Now, please don't mix these two options up too much. If you're setting out for a hide-and-seek, a difficult hide, put it out in the open, in a field, by a country road, maybe in an urban area, under a seat or by a sign, but not in a forest, not near a city park garden or similar place where the finders are going to trample all over the specimens while searching. If you're trying to take someone to a feature, then do that. Put the box, preferably an ammo can, of course, or a 2-litre click-plack, nearby with a really good hint, so the finder enjoys the location, logs the find, makes some swaps with the kids, and moves on without damaging the flora. How many times have you come across a tree that's at a waypoint and got lots of bark stripped off that tree? Well, making a clever hide under the bark sounds like kind of fun, but it's really, really bad for the tree. The only way for searchers to find your cache is to pull bits off the tree. Not a great idea, really. Unless perhaps you give a really good hint focusing them where to look and just enjoy the fact that your special camo's prevented a muggling find, but not wrecked a tree. In fact, if you've ever come back to any one of your caches and see the surrounding areas being trashed, it really is your fault, not the seeker's. If you left good instructions, this is pretty unlikely to happen. Well, have you ever had a go at Munzee yet? For those who don't know what Munzeeing is, have a look at www.munzee.com and learn about this smartphone treasure hunting hobby that's such a close tie to our geocaching. Well, during our famous night caching walk around Lake Naroto last month, while Darren was over here visiting, as described in the last episode of GeoTalk, I was standing around waiting for the bunch to find a cache that I'd already logged a while back. So I opened up the Munzee application on my phone. And what do you think? I was leaning on a small bridge that was listed as holding a Munzee. So into the capture mode I went and bagged my second ever Munzee. I found it was a little bit tricky to do this in the dark. The camera on my phone didn't like auto-focusing under torchlight, but eventually it captured and was logged. So then, some from the rest of the group got interested and tried to capture the Munzee also. But horrors. New Zealand's only got two rural cell phone providers, and my provider, starting with a T, had data coverage there. The other network had none. And guess who was the only person in the group on that provider? So, no Munzees for anyone else that day, even with Chris doing the typical cell phone users wandering around in circles, holding up high and all sorts of things. Still not enough coverage to allow you to lie on the ground under a footbridge and take a photo of what was found. This highlights a trap with this high-tech hunt. It really only works in mostly urban areas where there's good cell phone data coverage. I did note at that time that there's a whole ring of Munzees around that lake, so on a return visit on the same trail a week or two later with Butterfly Lady, I brought out my phone and started Munzeeing our way around, while grabbing a couple of caches that Linda had not logged then. And horrors! Around 3/4 of the way round the trip, my phone battery went flat. This constant running with the GPS on and the screen lit up, plus the use of the camera lots of time, took its toll. So now I have a few more Munzees, but not everything around that lake yet. I'm not too sure how far this hobby will go. I've had a few successes and lots of frustration, so as a standalone activity, I doubt if it'd hold my interest much more, but it certainly is a good way to vary your caching trips when an opportunity arises. So far I've only seen one Munzee placer whose username doesn't match an active geocacher, so there's a pretty high degree of shared interest in this hobby. Okay, well, that, Darren, it's back to you.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. Certainly some very good pointers there, and the sort of points that I think hold true around the world. In fact, here in Australia, we've got a similar problem with myrtle rust, which is getting into a lot of eucalypt and other native plants along the east coast of Australia. And there was recently another notice from the Queensland government asking hikers and bushwalkers and geocachers to just to be a bit careful in some of those areas and to avoid those contaminated areas. And I know that also in Victoria they have some problems with cinnamon fungus down there as well, causing problems with some of the xanthoria trees. So as geocachers, we really do need to stick to the trail as much as possible and to take heed of any advice regarding any sort of pathogens that might cause problems to the environment. Well, with that, now it's time to have a go at the GeoTalk trivia question. Now, this was a question that I asked way back, I think, in episode 25, so quite a number of years ago, and I thought we might revisit it again. And the trivia question for this episode is, what are the most unloved geocaches in Australia and New Zealand? So what are the most unloved geocaches in Australia and New Zealand? That is, the caches with the most number of days since they last were found. So not since they're last hidden, but since they were last found. The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, we're joined now from New Zealand by Wayne, also known as Money Dork. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, apart from being one of New Zealand's most prolific geocaches, you're also involved in a pretty special event occurring next year. Tell us a bit about it.
Yes, I'm involved in the organising committee for the New Zealand Mega 2012 in Dunedin, 19th to 22nd of October 2012.
Any particular reason for that date?
Well, that date is New Zealand Labour Weekend, so it's a public holiday in New Zealand for all the local caches that are going to be attending.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Now, the city of Dunedin, tell us about your city.
So Dunedin is New Zealand's southernmost major city. It's home to a major university. It's got quite a diverse population. It's got some fantastic geocaching, lots of scenic native bush, lots of hills, lots of and a really nice harbour and kind of ocean setting. It's famous for its New Zealand fur seals, its yellow-eyed penguin colony, its little blue penguin colonies, and it is the only mainland albatross colony in the world.
So it sounds like for those families that might be considering coming across for the mega event from Australia or elsewhere overseas, while one part of the group might be out geocaching, those who aren't interested in geocaching, there's certainly no shortage of things for them to do.
That's right. There's lots and lots of interesting activities for the whole family.
Okay. Now tell us, where in Dunedin is the event going to be held?
So the event is going to be held in the Silverstream Valley at the Waiora Scout Camp. So Silverstream Valley is probably about 10 kilometres from Dunedin. It's quite, the location is quite a scenic native bush setting. It's surrounded by both exotic forest with the Silverstream Forest and Native Forest with the Murray Flat Scenic Reserve.
Mm-hmm. For those who aren't into camping, are there plenty of accommodation options available?
There are lots of accommodation options available in Dunedin and in Mosgiel. Mosgiel is a large suburb of Dunedin, a city in its own right, in effect. So Waiora Scout Camp, Silverstream Valley, is roughly halfway in between the two, slightly inland from both.
Okay. And anything that you've got planned at this stage for the event?
So at the moment, we're still in the early stages of planning. The event's roughly 12 months away. We are only just going live with the website for the event and so on this week at mega.gps.org.nz. It won't actually be up, may be up by the time this podcast is out. We have got lots of things planned. Pretty much styled on the 2010 Oz Mega, so that's really the only Mega I've been to, so that's where I'm copying a lot of ideas from.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, and so you've given it, there's a website that's coming up fairly soon if people want to find out more. Otherwise, can they contact you, or is there an email address they can contact if they want to find more information?
The easiest way to contact people for more information at the moment is through the New Zealand Recreational GPS Society forums. So the Mega is being organised by the New Zealand Recreational GPS Society. I'm currently president of that society, and chair of the Mega Organising Committee. So that's forums.gps.org.nz. And for those that are interested in looking up the location of the Mega, the coordinates are south 45, 48.950 and east 170, 25.600.
Excellent. All right, we'll give a link in the show notes for that as well. And just finally, I mean, the Mega event initially was going to be planned for Christchurch, and most people, if not everyone, is aware of the tragedy that struck that city over the last 12 months. You've been involved in the operation to help in the cleanup and the rebuilding. How are things going with Christchurch, and how are the people of Christchurch coping?
So my role in the has more been civil defence response. I'm responsible for the health system response to the earthquake. The central city itself is still cordoned off, unavailable to the public, and is really now a construction site, or actually a demolition site, with buildings that were damaged being removed for safety reasons. The city itself, half of the city was badly affected by the earthquake. The other half was inundated by refugees, for want of a better description, from the half that was badly affected. So one half of the city has got a whole lot of houses that aren't inhabitable, and the other half of the city looks more or less untouched but is very busy. The streets are overloaded with cars because people are bunking with friends from the other side of town. People are still wondering what the future means. They're still waiting for news about insurance payouts, some of them. Others have had insurance payouts, but it's been roughly 7,500 earthquakes since the first one on the 4th of September. So earthquakes, you know, you get three or four a day, and those three or four can be anything from a minor one, kind of three on the Richter scale, through to some severe ones, like we've had a couple of more fives and sixes.
Any idea on when things will be back to normal, or as normal as they can be?
It really depends on Mother Nature. It depends on how long the earthquakes carry on occurring for, and that's unknown. It could be anything from 2 years to 30 years. So obviously everyone hopes that it won't be long, that things will settle down.
Well, our thoughts go to everyone in Christchurch and in the Canterbury region, and hopefully sometime later next year, when you get a wave of geocaches, will help lift the mood of the area.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I mean, the local geocaching community are still active. They're still placing caches, finding caches.
All right. Well, look, thanks very much for bringing us up to date on what's happening with the Mega event. And hopefully we'll speak to you again in a few months' time. And all the best with your caching down in New Zealand.
Thank you. And for those of you that haven't heard, I'm actually relocating to Australia soon. So we'll be caching quite a bit over there. Still involved in organising the Mega over in New Zealand, but there's quite a team of people, roughly 8 or 9 different caching accounts involved in organising the Mega in New Zealand, and so it will be going on regardless of my relocation.
All right. Well, watch out, everyone in Australia. It looks like someone else is going to be giving us all a run for our money. Once again, Wayne, thanks very much for joining us on GeoTalk.
Thank you. Bye.
It's time for a quick whiz around the country to have a look at some of the events that are occurring. And on the 4th of November is the Friendly Floaties at Nightmark 2 CETO event. That's being held in the city of Melbourne. On the 5th of November is Fluffy Fisher's Farewell Flash. That's being held down in Illawarra. On the 8th of November is the City Cacher Catch-Up. That's being held in Brisbane. In Adelaide, on the 9th of November, is GSAC How To The Basics. On the 11th of November, which happens to be the 11th of the 11th of the 11th, there's a number of events being held to mark that date in Canberra, Adelaide Hills, Melbourne, the Illawarra, Perth and Maitland, New South Wales. So check out those events. On the 12th of November is Remember to Bring the Pot for Tea by Flipper & Co. That's up in the Adelaide Hills. And finally, on the 23rd of November, the Puzzles and Coffee episode for A New Hope event. That's being held by Norkmeister over in Canberra. If you've got an event that you want to publicise on the podcast, don't don't forget to call it in on 02 800 50 436, or you can email it in to us at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Well, it's time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and we've got a couple of emails that have come in the last month. First off, Jeff, known as Mr. Roo down in Canberra, says, "Greetings from Canberra at the ACT. Finally got around to contacting the show. Enjoys listening every month on the bus on the way to work and always looks forward to each episode." Thanks very much, Jeff. He wants to mention that he first got into geocaching back in 2008 while on a camping trip with a friend called Josajara. I've seen that name a bit around Canberra. He said that while they were out camping, his friend said, "Why don't we go out and look for a cache?" And Jeff says he laughed at the time and said, "What, you want me to go out and help you find plastic containers in the bush?" Well, 3 years later, he now hides his head in shame, because after he's now found 2,591 of them and been to many places that he would never have been. Usually does most of his caching riding the electric push bike or walking, as he doesn't drive. Anyway, recently he introduced a muggle to geocaching. He came across someone while he was out in the bush looking for a cache by the name of Box Vale Descent, GC2C8QQ, and this muggle came along and joined him along the way, and seems to have had a great time and has now signed up, but he's awaiting the first find. Another email from someone we've heard from before, Michael, by the name of Groovy Do. Wanted to point out that a local paper down at the Coffs Harbour had featured geocaching in the local paper, so we'll give you a link to that in the show notes. And he also wants to say he hopes that people who have found his cache recently have had a bit of fun coming across them. And finally, an email from the US from Stephen, known as Stephen W54. He wants to say congratulations to the Spin Doctors on completing your caching calendar, finding a cache on all the calendar days of the year. He says that personally he has an easier goal, because he finds that one quite a bit difficult, that he's looking for a cache on each of the calendar weeks, and also on the upcoming leap day. But he expects that he might run into some difficulties as the rainy season comes up. Well, thanks very much for that, Stephen. And yes, you did quite cleverly see that the Spin Doctors just recently found a cache on the 20th of October, which was the only day that we had left blank. I think after last year, we gave it a red hot go last year and we fell short by 2 days, one in February and October 20th. And I can tell you there were a lot of alarms set on both the phone, the computer, everywhere to remind me that I had to find a cache that day. And it wasn't easy either. We had one DNF, but yeah, we've got that one out of the way. So another challenge we'll have to set ourselves for the near future. We've got some calls now. The first one comes from Team Mether, and they've got a milestone that they wish to call in.
Hi, GeoTalk Podcast. It's Team Mether here, just calling in a milestone. Just recently completed my 100th cache after 3-plus years and kids and life in between. That was the old factory GC2X9TN. Hopefully the next 100 comes a lot quicker. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thanks for that call, Team Mether, and don't worry, I'm sure your next 100 will come a little bit quicker. And let's catch up now with Frank over in Peru to see how we went in finding a geocache over near Machu Picchu.
G'day, Darren. It's Pipes Down Under again. My geo wife and I have just finished 4,000 steps down from our last campsite, which was only around about 3,800 metres, to reach the Sun Gate that overlooks Machu Picchu. And this is just an incredible sight. These Inca ruins, which we've seen all the way along the trek for the last 4 days, and then to culminate in finishing here at Machu Picchu, is just incredible to see these sheer cliffs and mountains surrounding this relic, or this lost city of the Incas, as they used to call it. It's just an awesome sight. Having a look at through some of the geocaches that were supposed to be in the area, a lot of the real caches seem to be either muggled or missing. We thought we won't attempt those. We might as well just go straight to the Machu Picchu fault line earth cache. And it's unbelievable. This splits the Machu Picchu in half, basically. One part of obtaining this cache, it was to measure the difference between a position on the fault line at ground zero and another part of it a little bit higher. Now, after walking up around 4,000 metres, we're down to 2,500 metres. We thought, hey, not a problem. We'll just go and do this measurement, run up the stairs to the next one. Well, after 10 paces, I thought, either the lungs aren't working real good still or the legs aren't working real good. Either way, we managed to get the measurements, which I'll send off shortly, plus the other EarthCache requirements. This place, Machu Picchu, is just unbelievable. The history, they were celebrating 100 years of the actual discovery of this place. It's just awesome, awesome site. Well, I'm really happy now. I've got my 500th cache, and I must thank my dear wife, Sue, a.k.a. Northumbrians, and just enjoy the rest of this place. It's just fantastic. Well, that's it for now. Only got one last thing to say. Geez, my knees are feeling ordinary.
G'day, GeoTalk. This is Smurfy Guy and GeoTutor, just checking in up in the Megalong Valley in New South Wales. Just completed our 500th cache. Bit of a milestone for both of us down at Mermaid's Cave, fantastic spot where they did the Mad Max films, or Mad Max 3, and yeah, really happy that we've just completed our 500. So hopefully we'll catch up with a lot of geocaches out in the wild. Thank you.
Well, thank you everyone for those calls and emails. And don't forget, if you haven't received one already, drop us an email over the next in the next few weeks with your postal address, and we'll send you out a GeoTalk path tag as a thank you for your contribution. Now, if you want to make a contribution, all you need to do is drop us an email, and you can even record your audio at home and attach it to the email. Send it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call it in, just call it in via your mobile or via Skype or however, to 02-800-50-436. That's 02-800-50-436. Well, that's about all for this episode of GeoTalk. Before we go, we better give you the answer to the trivia question for this episode, and that was, what are the most unloved geocaches in Australia and New Zealand? Now, by unloved, we mean those caches that have had the longest number of days since they were last found. And so in no particular order, in South Australia, it's just hanging with 1,622 days since it was last found. In the ACT, Southern Outpost with 1,121. In New South Wales, I6 Key with 3,199 days since it was last found. In Northern Territory, Vic River Valley, 1,216 days. And unfortunately, it's had a travel bug dropped in there. And so there's some poor owner that hasn't seen their travel bug move for 4 years. So if anyone's up near there, please rescue it. In Queensland, Sunset View with 1,804. In Tasmania, Arm River Track Series Mount Oakley with 1,063. In Victoria, the Silent Sentinel with 2,142. In WA, it's Cruising Number 5 with 1,938. In the North Island of New Zealand, it's Mangahai Old Road Waterfall. Please, any locals, correct my pronunciation of that one. 1,028. And in the South Island of New Zealand, Bearing Up with 1,434. So it looks like New South Wales has the most unloved geocache. Hopefully someone will find it soon. Now, if you're interested in trying to find those, it's worth knowing that GCA, the Geocaching Australia website, actually has two locationless caches, or three of them, sorry, that you can log a find at. That's if you find a cache that hasn't been found in 6 months, in 1 year, or in 2 years. So they are GA2689, GA2699, and GA2698, all by PJM, PJM. So you can check out those, and if you find a cache that hasn't been found in a very long time, you can log a find on that locationless geocache. And of course, any caches that haven't been found in a while may be a bit of a challenge for you to have a go and see if you can find them. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Don't forget, send in your answer for the geostuff.com.au competition. And until next time, safe geocaching.